the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
BBC News at 5 o'clock. This is Charlotte Simpson. The Chancellor, Rachel Rees, will promise there'll be no return to austerity despite tough decisions on public finances in a speech at the Labour Party conference. Her address risks being overshadowed by a debate about the decision to cut the winter fuel allowance for many pensioners. Senior ministers have also been under scrutiny on the issue of donations, including holidays and clothing. Our political editor, Chris Mason, says Labour MPs and members are hoping Rachel Reeves' speech will draw a line under the row.
There's a real hunger here, a real desire for this party in government to crack on with doing stuff after years of being starved of that because they kept losing elections. And also, as I say, trying to move on from the bumpiness of the last couple of weeks.
Figures obtained by BBC News show the number of times machetes, swords and so-called zombie knives have been logged by police has almost doubled in the last 5 years. From tomorrow, it will be illegal to possess zombie-style knives and machetes in England and Wales as an amnesty for people to surrender the weapons without prosecution comes to an end. Commander Stephen Clayman from the National Police Chiefs Council says the tackling of knife crime is complex.
Manufacturers quite cleverly got around the design, and like everything, and laws are iterative, aren't they? They have to adapt, and of course it needed to change. It will have an impact. I can't say, you know, it will be the end of the issue, because it clearly won't.
Israel says it's conducting extensive strikes on Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Last night, President Biden said the US would do everything it could to stop a wider war breaking out after a weekend of heavy cross-border fire. Campaigners have warned that the cuts to Welsh Environmental Watchdog will put nature at risk. Natural Resources Wales is seeking to close 265 posts and is considering closures to visitor centres. Stephen Messenger reports.
Natural Resources Wales says it needs to make around £13 million worth of savings and has been consulting staff on potential job cuts. The proposals include scaling back in areas such as advising on green issues and enforcement work, including tackling waste crime, though investment in dealing with water pollution will increase. The trade union Unison has warned the regulator could be left without enough staff on the ground to protect the environment. NRW says it's a challenging time for public bodies and it's making every effort to protect work that has the most impact on nature, climate and pollution.
Researchers at the University of Aberdeen are creating a smartphone app to help skin cancer survivors check if the disease has returned. The app will help people to examine and monitor their skin. A built-in chatbot will enable users to upload images and information about worrying skin changes so their concerns can be quickly addressed by healthcare professionals. The weather: heavy rain and showers in central and southern areas. The southeast will turn brighter in some areas later. The north will be drier with some cloud, patchy too across northern Scotland. BBC News, it's 3 minutes past five.
I'm Matt Shawley, coming to you live from Westminster, Monday to Friday from 2 o'clock.
Order!
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel in Brockenhurst.
When you went down on one knee in the New Forest, it wasn't outside, was it?
It was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
So you could just really concentrate on the meal without the distraction?
Yeah.
I do wonder about this feature sometimes.
Matt Shawley.
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Wake Up to Money from BBC 5 Live.
Hello, welcome to Wake Up to Money, a budget to rebuild Britain. That's what Rachel Reeves is going to pledge in her speech to the Labour Party conference in Liverpool later. We're going to dive into what businesses are hoping to hear from the Chancellor. Thousands of people waking up without a job this morning after the construction giant ISG collapsed. We'll have a look at why and what it means for the subcontractors, other businesses in the construction industry, taxpayers as well. And
look at me, I'm Chandler.
Could I
be wearing any more clothes?
Friend's character, not Labour politician. 30 years after Central Perk opened its doors, we'll find out how Friends is still big business, generating millions of dollars worldwide.
Wake Up to Money with Sean Farrington.
Good morning. Welcome. It is Wake Up to Money on BBC Five Live. It's Monday morning, the 23rd of September, and it's just after 5 o'clock. Thank you for being with us today. We've got plenty to get through, but also we will be having a good old preview of what we're going to hear from the Chancellor today, the mood of the Labour Party conference this week. We heard, didn't we, on Friday morning, Phyllis talking about the consumer confidence, the ability, the desire of us all to be spending or not at the moment. And that's taken a bit of a whack this month. Is that anything to do with the mood coming out of those at the top of government and the conversations that have been had about what is in store? I mean, we've already had the announcement on the winter fuel payment being cut. What else is going to come at the budget? Does that impact you? And is that impacting the thinking of businesses who will be attending the conference today? So it's a big old business day going on for the Labour Party, as they put it. I think reports in the papers of £3,000 a ticket for business leaders, 500 of them, to be having an audience with the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, the Business Secretary, questions and answers, getting to make their point. If you had that opportunity to make that point directly to them, what would it be? 85058 this morning. Is it right that the front page of the Daily Telegraph this morning, the message is UK must accept hard times or risk ruin, says Reeves, front of the Times. Good times ahead if we seize them, says Reeves. Financial Times, Reeves to deny plan for austerity after criticism of Labour's gloomy rhetoric. And if you go on the BBC website this morning, you will see that Rachel Reeves promises a budget to rebuild Britain. So what is it going to be all about? Fiona Eastwood, Chief Operating Officer at Merlin Entertainments, running, of course, tourist attractions around the country, Madame Tussauds, Alton Towers, Warwick Castle, and many, many more, sitting on the board of UK Hospitality as well. Fiona, good morning to you. Thanks for joining us.
Morning, Sean. It's great to be here.
It's going to be some interesting few days about the tone of things, isn't it? Do you expect it to change from the Labour Party in the coming days compared to what we have heard since they took power in July?
It does seem over the weekend that it's got a bit more positive. I mean, certainly what we've seen this year, and we've invested quite heavily in our new product this year to drive demand, and from hotels to roller coasters. And we are absolutely hopeful that what we're expecting from government is a little bit more positivity. But certainly, as a global company, when we look to invest, we're after stability and predictability to ensure that the UK remains an attractive investment and growth environment.
Have you noticed a change in recent weeks?
Well, we actually, I mean, it's been an interesting year. We had weather wasn't on our side, and whatever we say, we do depend on good weather for people to go outside and enjoy themselves at our theme parks. We did see an uptick in August, actually, and that's across the hospitality and leisure sector. So August was up 3.8% in spend on the prior month of July, and 1.8% year on year. And that's probably a combination of better weather. We all saw that the summer started in August, but also the interest rates were coming down. So there did seem to be a positive momentum. We've actually come out of peak, and so we're now all geared up for Halloween. So we're hopeful that we'll have a strong Halloween this year, because Halloween is one of our big moments. We've got Easter, summer and Halloween, and it's the sort of fastest growing part of our business.
The weather's so crucial, Fiona. Are you calling the end of summer after what seemed like large parts of the country had quite the turn over the weekend?
It's certainly been biblical this morning and over the weekend, yeah.
Is it a notable difference with Saturday booming, Sunday not so much?
It does. It has an immediate impact, yeah. We see that people are quite happy. You know, we know that whatever happens, that we are giving people joy day in, day out, and the weather does play a part in that, absolutely.
I'd like to know people's thoughts this morning. 85058. Your weekend plans, how did the Saturday compare to the Sunday? The amount of people I've spoken to who seem to be almost, you know, basking on a beach near them if they could get to one on Saturday, and Sunday it was the waterproofs fully on, actually just staying indoors, duvet days, all the chat. How did your Saturday and Sunday differ? Do let us know this morning. Give us a sense of that spend. Was more of it outdoors on Saturday and indoors on Sunday? I've got Ella Hoja with me as well this morning, Head of Fixed Income at Newton Investment Management. Hi, Ella.
Good morning.
Ella, the stuff you look at, as head of fixed income. So you're looking at those kind of investments that would return people some money year on year is the logic. So if we talk about bonds, you might have a bond that you take out that people will get a certain percentage, almost like an interest rate, almost like a savings account every single year. And I guess you look at that kind of stuff that businesses will do as well. Just explain a little bit what fixed income means for you at Newton Investment Management.
Well, we start off by trying to understand the landscape. So figuring out things like the direction of travel for growth in an economy and particularly inflation, but things like the budget that we're all waiting to hear from this new government. So those are all important. Why? Because they're all factors that drive growth and inflation. And for us in fixed income, what matters is both of those factors feed into interest rates. And so if you're in fixed income, you get paid a fixed coupon to own something. And so you buy mutual funds, so some of which we provide for our clients, and effectively those give you a return. So as part of your pension or investment portfolio that you might have. So of course, the higher the interest, the more return you get. But it's not as simple as that.
And so you will look at the future prospects of economies like the UK's. What is the story of the UK right now, from your perspective?
We spoke on this program following the election, so the morning of the after-election morning. Look, I mean, if you look at financial markets, it might be all doom and gloom in terms of headlines, but actually investors are giving some benefit of doubt in terms of growth prospects for the UK. I don't want to overplay it, but if you look at price action, so for example, what sterling's been doing since the election, so it's been going up versus the dollar and somewhat versus the euro as well, but also UK equities actually has been a bright spot. So they've been returning pretty well over the course of the last 12 months for certain, but particularly over the last several months. I mean, let's say 2-3 months. So markets are thinking, you know, there might be some hope yet, you know, despite the gloomy headlines.
So where are the markets, those investors, you know, around the world making very big decisions with a lot of money? Where are they getting that hope from when they look at the UK economy?
Fiona just mentioned the stability landscape. It's a luxury we do not see in the US. Obviously, we have elections there and we don't know what the outcome is going to be. It's quite uncertain. So also in Europe, we know there's quite a bit going on the political scene. And in the UK, at least we now know what's going to be ahead of us over the next 5 years. I mean, at least we have a rough idea. So stability is one factor. The second is the comments from this government that they want to support business, that they are pro-business, and certainly want to attract investors to come to the UK, but also the fact that UK assets are cheap. You know, the pound sterling is on a multi-year, I mean, it's not as weak as it got obviously up to a few years ago, but it's still cheap relative to other currencies. And that I mentioned UK equities certainly are on the cheaper side relative to other markets. And last but not least, interest rates seem to be heading down. So usually that gives you some, you know, positive momentum, particularly for financial markets.
Fiona, do you feel that as well? Are you making investment decisions at Merlin that you might not have done before the election?
Well, we've had a big year this year investments. We tend to do a sort of, we're a capital intensive business. So we do tend to work out about 3 to 5 years because of that. So this year's actually been, we've invested 90 million in the UK in new roller coaster at Hyperia, the tallest, fastest in the UK. And we've also opened 2 new hotels, one at Legoland Windsor, the Woodland Village, and a Warwick Castle 60 room medieval hotel. So
has that been anything to do with the political landscape, the decision to do that?
Not really. I mean, but we do look across, you know, we're a global business. We're in 23 countries. So we do look at, like I said, stability. And as Ella said, it's important to have that stability before, while we make investments. But the UK is a really important market for us. And it's our home market. We're a proud UK company. And we also see that there is potential in this market.
Let's have a little bit of a listen to Angela Rayner, the Deputy Prime Minister, who, as the conference got underway yesterday, made the first keynote speech there. We hear that term a lot this week and in the coming weeks as the conference season continues. She started her speech by saying, "Change begins now." A familiar note of caution about the economic picture, though.
We can't wish our problems away. We have to face them. But conference things can get better if we make the right choices. Sustained economic growth is the only way to improve the lives of working people. And we're fixing the foundations to put Britain back on the path to growth.
So, Ella, you talked about, you know, stability that may well come from having this Labour government in. But the talk about what the economy is like right now, as we heard there from Angela Rayner, the Labour Party's view, the current government's view, that the part that the economy is in a bit of a mess right now, is it?
Well, I mean, we're not in recession, technically speaking. So at least, you know, if you want to look at the bright side, that's probably a good starting point. And we've seen recovery in spending. We saw retail sales be a bit stronger. And Fiona just alluded to a better August. Certainly some of the, those are some of the metrics we've seen. Unemployment is low, is not as low as it got up to last year, but it's certainly on a more benign trend. But of course, I mean, we acknowledge there are challenges in the economy. Growth is still not strong enough. And at the same time, we do have a productivity problem in this country. That's a major one that requires reform processes that will take time. So, of course, you know, things are not hunky-dory. I don't want to overplay it. But at the same time, I don't think it's as bad as we're sort of making out to be. And you can see that hit in terms of headlines in consumer confidence numbers. We got those last week and they were pretty dire. And I think they are influenced by what we're reading in the media more broadly.
And a lot of that, Fiona, is coming from the words of those at the top of government, the Prime Minister, the Chancellor, the Deputy Prime Minister. Are they talking down the country at the moment?
I think there's always a danger when some, you know, it's like starting a new role or a new business, isn't it? You want to fix various things very quickly. And clearly there's a message they need to get out around some of the painful choices. At the same time, there's a direct correlation with hope, isn't there? We need now realise there's some, what we're hearing is a short-term pain. We now need to understand what the medium to long-term gain is, and I suppose that's what they're going to be sharing today. And we're hopeful that there will be a strong growth plan that's coming out from the government.
Something else that will be a big, big talking point at the various meetings that go on this week at the Labour Party conference, Angela Rayner and the Business Secretary Jonathan Reynolds were meeting with trade union leaders ahead of the conference to discuss the government's workers' rights package. This was one of the key focuses of the Deputy Prime Minister's speech, promising a new deal for working people.
And I can confirm today that the Employment Rights Bill will be tabled in Parliament next month. They said we couldn't do it. Some tried to stop it in its tracks. But after years of opposition, we are on the verge of historic legislation to make work more secure, make it more family friendly, go further and faster to close the gender pay gap, ensure rights are enforced and trade unions are strengthened. That means repealing the Tories' anti-worker laws and new rights for union reps too.
Fiona, you're on the board of UK Hospitality, as I said. Mm. Are those changes to workers' rights needed?
Look, I mean, when we talk about exploitative zero-hour contracts, of course we support that. At the same time, there needs to be a recognition that there's flexibility for seasonal staff, be it students and then parents to select shifts that suit their availability. You know, we also need to have continued provision for probationary periods and the ability to flexibly adjust the size of the workforce to respond to seasonal requirements.
Do you have concerns? Boss of Merlin, I suspect you have a lot of people under your watch, and maybe because of the weather, as you said, influencing that industry so much. Are some of those effectively seasonal workers? Do you have concerns that it might change how you run your business in 2025?
Look, we are committed to being a good employer, and it's important, you know, we state we want to be the greatest place in the world to work and play for our teams and our guests. And this summer we recruited over 2,000 seasonal staffs, and that was a 30% return rate, so that demonstrates we're a good employer.
So does that mean 30% of them had worked for you previously?
Yes they had.
Right. Yeah. And so you've obviously done that this summer, you know, successfully, mm-hmm. as you put it. Would you expect to be able to do the same thing again, given, you know, what's on the horizon from the Labour Party?
Well, like I said, we need to make sure that absolutely we're a good employer, and we need the support the government's commitment, to ban exploitative zero-hour contracts, which we don't do. That's
no,
all
of course.
Right.
And so, if they ban that, that won't impact you next year, because you say because you're not using those contracts.
No.
So I just wonder what would, even if it's just tweaks, what's going to be different?
Look, you'd still need to have a provision for probationary periods for full-time staff as well as seasonal, and to be able to be flexible and adjust the size of the workplace, workforce according to seasonal requirements and demand. We do need to still be able to shift people and be able to react to the market conditions.
Are you a bit concerned that there may be something in that means you won't be as flexible next summer as you would have been able to be this year?
That, yes, we do need to make sure that we can still do that.
And Ella, from a worker's perspective, do you sort of have a view on how this might change the landscape of the jobs market? You talked about, unemployment maybe being a little lower than some thought, or a little better situation than previously thought. Could any of these changes, do you think, have an impact on a business ability to recruit, to get the staff they need?
It's a fine balance to strike, as Fiona is saying, because if you sort of tighten rules too much, it kind of goes counter to what we were discussing earlier in terms of attracting business and investment to the UK. So there has to be, very fine balance indeed maintained in this case. There might be some interesting aspects coming out of flexi work. I know that's sort of been under review. Mm-hmm. So that might be interesting to observe from our side as well. I think the debate is out there in terms of research that's been provided so far. That's, for and against, work from home or flexible working. So that would be interesting to see what the government comes up with.
850-58, if you want to join in the conversation this morning, we'll be chatting about this. We're going to be getting into Friends as well. 30 years ago, Friends kicked off, I think it was 30 years ago yesterday, Friends kicked off on with that first episode on the US TV network. It's one way of making large parts of the country feel very old very quickly, is to say that Friends kicked off 30 years ago. But we're going to be talking about the impact it's had and how they managed to keep it going. I think, at one point it was still one of the most viewed programmes on Netflix or whichever streaming platform it was on at any one time. Are you still, if you're looking for that half an hour or so escape of an evening, would you still turn to Friends? An old box set? Is there an old box set that you would turn to? 850-58. Let us know. Join in the conversation. Let's get the weather forecast for the day. Here's Chris Fawkes at the BBC Weather Centre.
Good morning. There's a threat of some flash flooding later on today from some extremely heavy rainfall. The Met Office have already issued an amber weather warning that encompasses Yorkshire, Lincolnshire, the Midlands. We might need to include parts of central southern England in this area as well, because it looks like the rain is going to be absolutely torrential for some. Now, how much rain? We're talking about, 80 to 120 millimetres of rain in the worst hit areas. That is 2 months' worth of rain in the space of, a day. And so we are likely to see some significant flash flooding. It's one of those days where it's certainly going to be worth checking on travel conditions before setting out on any lengthy kind of journeys. And even outside of that zone across England and Wales, there will be some pretty big thundery downpours elsewhere as well. Northern Ireland and Western Scotland will have broken cloud and spells of sunshine. East Scotland, rather cloudy and misty once again. And for North Scotland, we've got a cold front moving in, bringing a spell of rain and ultimately cooler air. Temperatures about 13 degrees for northern Scotland. Otherwise, temperatures 16 to 20. But please stay in touch with the forecast. We are expecting some quite nasty flash flooding through the day. Chris Fawkes, 5 Live Weather.
Francis has been in touch saying, I got wet through walking home from church yesterday.
Alrighty, thanks a lot.
How? Cheers, Chris, whoever that was. And we will get more from the weather forecasters and our colleagues at the BBC Weather Centre throughout the day. Adrian in Manchester has been in touch saying, isn't the loss of public spending, that confidence loss we had talked about earlier, a direct result of the Bank of England's drive to reduce inflation? Higher interest rates equals reduced spending equals lower inflation, says Adrian. 850-58 is the number to message us on. Let's cross over to Singapore. Speak to our, we always describe Mariko as our our business correspondent in Singapore. Hello, Mariko.
Hello, Sean.
Now, for a bit of context, just in case, I mean, how can people not be aware of Mariko or his interests listening to Wake Up to Money, subscribing on BBC Sounds? We often talk about business. I'll often ask you about sport, and you will often say, no, I'm not really. I should know more about golf. I haven't really been following that bit of the Olympics. No idea what you're on about with the Premier League. And then you say, but baseball, Sean, I never get a chance to talk about baseball.
Yep.
Right.
But I can now, right?
Well, let's just play this little bit. This guy, it was a mega money move when it happened last year. And we did actually talk about it on Wake Up to Money. And now he's hitting it out of the park, quite literally.
On a 1-2, Ohtani sends one in the air. The other way. Back it goes. Gone! One-of-a-kind player. One-of-a-kind season. Shohei Ohtani starts the 50-50 club.
Now, Mariko, explain.
That was me, by the way, when it happened. Yeah. And my parents, when they were calling us, they were screaming, oh my gosh, you did it! Yes, very exciting time.
So, explain why. Let's go back to the mega money move last year and then tell us why we're playing a bit of baseball on Wake Up to Money this morning.
Sure. So his name is Shohei Ohtani, a Japanese baseball player who's moved to Los Angeles Dodgers last year for a record, an eye-watering $700 million contract last year. And what that very excited American commentators were saying, 50-50 club, it's when, and, you know, let me try and explain baseball for once, the sport for once. So stolen bases is when a player runs from one of the bases to the next one while the pitcher is throwing the ball and the hitter doesn't manage to hit it, but the player, the runner, actually runs so fast that he reaches the next base. So that's stolen base, and also home run, obviously the big hit that goes over the wall. So he's hit 50 home runs and he's stolen 50 bases in one season, which is the record number. The last time was like 41 or 42. So that's why that commentator was really, really excited. But what was funny was that he then hit another home run and then he stole another base. So it became 51-51, like within literally the matter of an hour. And then now he's hit, okay, let me check the latest. He's now hit 53 home runs and stolen 55 bases. We've got a week to go. Now people are saying, oh my goodness, could it be like 60-60, which would be like unheard of. So that's why many people in America and practically everyone in Japan is very, very excited.
Well, look, I'm pleased for you, Mariko, on many levels, that you finally get a chance to talk even more about the sporting love of your life. Just that contract, when we discussed it, and it was making headlines around the world because there'll be a lot of, you know, the top footballers in the world will be looking at how much other top sports people are earning. $700 million contract. And that's over, what is it, a decade or so?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean,
not that that makes it any smaller. But this puts into perspective, why is it the LA Dodgers were willing to fork out that much?
Yeah, absolutely. But also, he's also a pitcher. So he doesn't just hit a ball, but he also throws a ball. But the, you know, what's fascinating about him is that he's actually had an injury and he had an operation exactly a year ago when he actually invented that 50-50 club. So while he's doing all the rehabilitations, he's just been achieving all these things as a hitter while everyone has been kind of waiting for him to recover as a pitcher as well. So he's been described as unicorn because he's one of the kind. And that definitely explains that massive contract. But also in terms of the economic contribution that he's been, you know, bringing to the LA, but also Japanese companies have been investing or, you know, sponsoring and advertising and all that kind of stuff. And I spoke to one professor who said the economic contribution was about $350 million last year. I think that number would be a lot higher this year because of his amazing performance. So there you go. That's me still wearing the business journalist hat.
Good.
How about that?
I knew you'd bring it in somewhere, Mariko. And it was the kind of thing that was, you know, baseball is never shared or popping up on my algorithm, you know, amongst a group of friends or whatever it might be. And that those
successes that he's had in the last week does seem to be. So there is amazing some cut through. Now, very briefly, Tamagotchi having a moment again.
Yeah, did you used to have it?
I think I did have one for a brief amount of time, but I didn't spend a lot of time. So this is like sort of this like egg thing with a small digital display that you had to look after. You had to feed every day or whatever by pressing the right buttons, and everybody, everybody loved it. Is it back?
Yeah. It's back. It's massively back. Its sales are like doubled in the last two years or so. And the UK now has its own Tamagotchi shop. So congratulations. But I would like to say Tamagotchi helped me learn English. Did you know that back in 1998?
I didn't. How was that?
When I first moved to Australia and I could speak practically no English, and there was a 10-year-old host family's brother who basically taught me English by to feed Tamagotchi. See, Tamagotchi eating. That's how I learn English. So there you go.
Well, look, without that, who knows? We might not have had that glorious last 5 or 10 minutes. Friends, is that on your box set shortlist? Mariko?
I used to love it. Yeah, I used to definitely love it. One, probably, you know, Hollywood, American popular culture that I am actually quite, aware of when I grew up watching just J-pop and, you know, Japanese dramas and so on.
Right, but not now. You've moved on to other things.
I've
just
moved
watching,
on.
Yeah, YouTube videos of...
All the children's stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Mariko, great to talk to you. Speak to you again very, very soon. Mariko, oi. In Singapore for us this morning, letting us know if you've noticed, if you've seen those videos shared of the successes in baseball of Shohei Ohtani in recent days. That's what it's all about. Fiona, friends, has that been one for you? Julia in the Scottish Boards has been in touch about her box set. So I just wonder, as Friends hits 30 years, is it one that was ever big for you, Fiona, or still is today?
It makes me feel very old, that's for sure, because I remember it when it first launched. And interesting enough, my niece, who's not even 30, so wasn't even born when it was around, but is a massive fan, they do seem to have kept reinventing their fan base with all of the repeats. I mean, it was a brilliant cultural phenomenon at the time, wasn't it? And it's great that it's still massively successful. I think it's about $1 billion a year in revenue.
That's incredible. Yeah, nice to have a brand like that in the palm of your hands to keep cashing in on. Ella, has it been much of a dent in your life, the Friends box set?
Very much so. I must have watched them at least 10 times over. I own the box set,
do
although
you?
I don't use it anymore because we have Netflix now. But I'm a big fan as well.
So you've still got that DVD box set somewhere sitting around gathering dust?
In my garage, yes.
Excellent. Would you ever stream a Friends episode?
Yes, sometimes, you know, to kill an evening or if you're basically wanting to watch something light and funny. Absolutely. Still do.
It's amazing, isn't it? Still turning back to those things that gave us the comfort all those years ago. Julia says that she borrowed a box set of Vicar of Dibley about 10 years ago from a friend. It's our go-to timeout. Dawn French, fantastic. My friend's husband bought her a replacement set for Christmas as he decided we should keep it as we loved it so much. Thank you, Julia. What is your go-to box set of choice when the weather, as so many have been in touch with us, turns the way it has in recent days, so many across the country? You go from a nice sunny walk on a Saturday and then you wake up on a Sunday, see the forecast. What's the box set you turn to? We're going to be talking about Friends, 30 years since that very first episode first appeared on US network TV. But what is it? Is it Vicar of Dibley? Is it Friends? Is there something else where you think, oh, I'm not going through all the streaming platforms. I'm not searching forever. I'm not going through the TV guide. I am going to just go with what I know and what makes me smile. 85058 this morning. Do let me know. It's 5:33.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
The BBC News headlines this morning. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will address the Labour conference today with a promise not to return to austerity. Her speech risks being overshadowed by a debate about the decision to cut the winter fuel allowance for many pensioners. Figures obtained by the BBC show the number of times machete swords and so-called zombie knives have been logged by police has almost doubled in the last 5 years. The weapons appeared in more than 14,000 crime logs last year, up from around 7,000 in 2019. Israel says it's conducting extensive strikes on the Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Last night, President Biden said the US would do everything it can to stop a wider war breaking out after a weekend of heavy cross-border fire. And researchers at the University of Aberdeen are creating a smartphone app to help skin cancer survivors check if the disease has returned. The app will help people to examine and monitor their skin. A built-in chatbot will enable users to upload images and information about worrying skin changes so their concerns can be addressed quickly by healthcare professionals. There are your news headlines this morning. Here with the sport is Andy Barwell.
It was a pulsating 2-2 draw at the Etihad Stadium between two Premier League title chasers. Manchester City moved back to the top of the table, although their 100% record isn't intact. After Leandro Trossard sending off in first-half stoppage time, some resolute defending looked like claiming unbeaten Arsenal the win, but John Stones got the City equaliser in the 98th minute, and Brighton drew 2-2 with Nottingham Forest. After Celtic's 5-2 victory over Falkirk in the Scottish League Cup, the Old Firm have been kept apart in the semi-finals. Vivian Miedema scored one goal and made another on her return to the Emirates Stadium. Manchester City drew 2-2 with their former club Arsenal in their Women's Super League opener. After the victory for Lando Norris in the Singapore Grand Prix, Max Verstappen's lead in the F1 Drivers' Championship is down to 52 points. There are six races to go. The American Billy Horschel claimed the European Tour's PGA Championship at Wentworth for the second time in 4 years. And after a washout yesterday, Somerset and Glamorgan will try again today at Trent Bridge in the final of cricket's 50-over one-day cup.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as the coming storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
Wake Up to Money with Sean Farrington.
Good morning. It is Wake Up to Money on BBC 5 Live. Thank you for all your messages about the box sets that you like to turn to. They're the comfort ones. It's not necessarily the brand new one that you're having to dip your toe in and try to figure out if you like it or not. Are you going to have to make a commitment to watch it at the same time every week if it's launched on a streaming platform or popping up on the old-fashioned terrestrial TV at a specific time every week and you want to watch it then? This is more, you don't want to think about what you're going to watch. So where do you turn? And we've had a variety of shows that people are mentioning over a fair few old decades as well. Somebody's saying my go-to TV show has to be Ted Lasso. Perfect TV. Relatively new one, that. So that's managed to break into the psyche of somebody as being the comfort telly to watch. Graham says, box set, Dad's Army. No matter what happens, always puts a smile on my face. We've had Sue in Portsmouth and Samantha in Richmond be in touch about Sex in the City. Samantha saying an oldie, 25 this year, but a goodie. Sue in Portsmouth says some of the dresses are to die for. And Wayne says, for me and the wife, it's one of three shows. MASH, Hogan's Heroes, House MD. Very interesting. So, like, yeah, again, some there, like House, I know, that's been going probably a couple of decades now, is it? But a relatively newer one compared to some of the other ones mentioned. So it's still possible to break in to think, right, what is it we're going to? I think in our household recent years, it's been the American Office. It needs to be something, doesn't it, where there are just dozens of episodes out there where you can just plonk one and you might not have seen it for a good few years, whereas those smaller box sets are a bit tricky when you know every single word that is coming next. But a lot of people who watch Friends are exactly that kind of person. So we're going to be talking about how 30 years on, what that brand really means. We've got the Labour Party conference, of course, continuing today. So therefore, lots of chat about various key issues that we're expecting to hear more about come the budget, particularly in just over a month's time. On housing, we've already had a fair few big promises from the government. Its key pledge has been to get 1.5 million homes built in the next 5 years, something Angela Rayner, who's also housing secretary, re-emphasised in her speech, promising to get Britain building.
The simple aspiration of a safe, secure and affordable home is further out of reach than ever. We will get Britain building, and building decent homes for working people. A new planning framework will unlock the door to affordable homes and provide the biggest boost to social and affordable housing in a generation.
Fiona, we've been talking about Fiona Eastwood, who's with me, to reintroduce Fiona, Chief Operating Officer at Merlin Entertainments, run plenty of tourist attractions around the country, Madame Tussauds, Alton Towers and the like. Fiona, that challenge to build the houses that we need, how big a deal is that? You know, you're running a big business yourself. When you see you need to try and ramp up to be building 1.5 million homes over the course of a parliament, are you hearing from the government they're doing the right things to actually achieve that?
I mean, it's a massive undertaking. And certainly the construction industry, as we've seen, is pretty challenged around cost and inflation, et cetera. So, again, look forward to hearing in the coming days how they'll achieve that as part of the plan going forwards.
Ella Hojo is also with me, Head of Fixed Income at Newton Investment Management. Ella, how important are things, those infrastructure issues like housing? Because you mentioned, you used that productivity word earlier as being one of the major issues our country faces. And I guess the inability to build the homes we need has been quite reflective of how much we're not as productive as a nation per person as we once were.
Yes, I mean, on the productivity side is also related to, you know, upping the skills and sort of rehashing the skill set of workers. But I think in terms of the housing side, well, you can see it in rent prices having gone up significantly and that trend still in play. So certainly alleviating some of the pressure of supply would help with the average person in the street. I guess it's owning a house is one of the key dreams of most British people. So certainly a very important factor to target.
Plenty more messages coming through on the box sets. Or Paige in Flitwick says, it's not a box set. I rewatched the 2005 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice on repeat. I was 8 when it came out. Still my favourite film now as well. Alan in Larkhall says, Still Game is a go-to for me. Very Scottish. All episodes on iPlayer. Urge non-Scots to try it out. The live show filled the Glasgow Hydro 5 times over 3 days. Brian in Clifton, Bristol. Got to be Schitt's Creek, he says. What an uplifting, hilarious show. Superb father and son combo as well. Do let us know. 85058. Nick says, porridge on iPlayer every time. Dominic, they're coming through. Detectorists, gentle and charming series with a wonderful ensemble cast, brilliant script, TV perfection. Let me know are you spending on any of this? Are any of you streaming these things, or is it all the dusty DVD like Ella's got in a garage of friends at the moment? I just wonder where the spend is coming from these days. Are you part of those that are streaming billions and billions of episodes of all this stuff, decades and decades on? Let me know your thoughts. We're going to get onto major story of the last few days. The UK operations, the construction giant ISG, collapsed into administration with more than 2,000 workers being made redundant immediately. Now, it may not be a household name, but it's the biggest construction company collapse since Carillion in 2018. It's had more than £1 billion worth of government contracts. So key questions to be answered there about what happens next. It's worked on the likes of Kew Gardens, Lord's Cricket Ground, the Velodrome for the 2012 Olympics. It was the main contractor on that failed British Volt Gigafactory in Northumberland as well. Stephen Rawlinson has been following all this very closely, as he does with the construction industry, as an independent analyst at Applied Value. Morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Was this a surprise to you, ISG going bust?
No, two reasons. One is it was probably had the wrong parent company since 2016, a US business called Convexys. And secondly, for the last 6 months, the industry has been watching this very carefully. It's been a slow car crash, just waiting to happen.
So could it have been avoided if you saw this, as many would have done, seen this coming from years ahead?
It was possible, but it needed more cash, and the owners were not willing to put that cash in, nor did the projects themselves have sufficient cash. So could it have been avoided? Possibly, but the truth of the matter is that Cathexis was in charge, and it was not willing to put the cash in, and neither were the customers.
When we often talk about an administration of a business, as many people might think of those, I mean, Carillion ends up going bust, but many people might see some of the names on the high street going into administration. So they have this financial difficulty, effectively not able to pay its debts, and any shareholders in the business lose all of the money. But the business continues. The financial restructuring sort of goes ahead, as tough as it may be for those involved and exposed, and a new buyer is found. Why wasn't this able to be the case with ISG?
Well, look, I mean, it has to go into administration first and legal process in order for it to actually basically be its own cathexis to say, right, OK, we've given up. So over the weekend and long before that, there would have been sort of preliminary people having a chat, but an event had to happen. And this is the event. So over the weekend and over the forthcoming days, you'll be seeing the administrator talking to a lot of people about how they get the project restarted. And that's particularly so with government as well, which saw this coming, and getting new people in to get folks back to work. And it's far more than 2,000 that were employed by ISG. It's probably tens of thousands throughout the industry and its supply chain, and the supply, you know, the larger suppliers plus their suppliers will be affected, some of whom will have lost money. But they'll be trying very hard with the administrator to recoup that from the customers as the projects get restarted.
So how does it work on the ground? And for those staff who, you know, this time last week, they may well have seen this kind of thing coming, but they still would have been turning up for work on a major project as part of a contract. What happened on Friday? When we say they immediately lost their jobs, those staff, what happens next?
What happens next is that new companies come in, like Morgan Sindall, like Kia, like Costain, and talk to the administrator on the larger jobs and say, you know, we're willing to take this on. We need some time to sort out exactly where it's up to, what needs to happen next, and how much it's going to cost. The certain thing about all of this is that some smaller companies will have lost some money, and the other thing is that these projects will probably now cost more because of this delay. And because new companies coming in will not be willing to run the same risks that ISG was running.
So those staff that lost their job immediately, it's very likely that there won't be a project there for them to walk into this morning. And how likely is it that they will have a job back on that project with the new developer constructor?
Highly likely. I mean, you heard earlier one of your people speaking about the lack of skills in the sector. So you've got a lot of people with the construction industry skills and a lot of work out there as well at the moment. So they won't walk into a job necessarily, but they will actually find jobs quite quickly in most cases. And these projects will restart. In my opinion, there is absolutely no question of that, because a lot of the buildings that are required are much needed.
But those big companies that may well take over those projects, I guess they'll have their own supply chains, their own suppliers. And is that one of the reasons why some of these subcontracts, some of the smaller businesses you talk about, will lose money on this, even though the project may continue?
The larger ones have been prepared for it. I mean, you know, they've been looking at this for 6 months. They'll know a lot of the people who work on these projects. They'll have been having conversations. So it's been happening. Because what will happen now is the larger companies, all of which, well, in most cases, have got very large balance sheets, equivalent to at least 10 to 15% of their turnover, will be able to get in there and fund these things. Essentially, on a large construction project, you're lending your balance sheet to your client. And what's happened here is that ISG did not have a balance sheet to do that. It didn't have sufficient cash to get it through some of the tougher times. But over the last 5-6 years, the larger companies like Balfour Beatty, like Morgan Sindall, like Costain have built up large cash balances, which enables them to get through the tougher times, which inevitably occur in a construction project.
You've been speaking, I guess, to some of these subcontractors and those along the way. What's the mood of some of them at the moment?
Well, I mean, the mood is quite predictable, isn't it? I mean, you know, there's a huge disappointment throughout the whole industry for the people involved, for the customers who were expecting to have these facilities. But by and large, the industry is very positive. It believes it can get through all of this because it believes there's lots of work around, and believes also that there are people who are working for ISG who are highly skilled, who are doing a good job. But it ran out of cash, basically.
Yeah.
It wasn't completing projects on time.
Have you got any sort of particular stories from any of the businesses, the suppliers that you've spoken to, just to get an idea of what it is those in charge there now are trying to manage on Monday morning?
Oh, fundamentally, they will need to be getting some cash. I mean, this is the main issue. But the stories I'm hearing of the larger people, I mean, fundamentally, they've stopped paying ISG any rebates that were owed, and we're very, very keen to make sure that ISG paid its bills sometimes before the work started, sometimes before the high equipment arrived on site, to make sure that they got paid. And that's been happening, and that's another reason this sort of snowballs. Because everybody wants to supply equipment to ISG, wants money in advance. And the client isn't willing to pay that money in advance till they see the generator on site or whatever equipment is required. So the whole thing starts to snowball.
Stephen, thank you for that update and very much appreciated. Stephen Rawlinson there, independent analyst at Applied Value. Making a fair few headlines this morning is something you may well have noticed in recent weeks. Diesel and petrol prices falling at the fastest rate since December. So households paying about £4 less to fill up a family car than they did a month ago. This is analysis from the RAC that found that the average price of a litre of unleaded petrol was just above £1.36 for diesel, almost £1.41 a litre. Fiona, who's a boss at Merlin Entertainment's tourist attractions business, I suspect, just given that, you know, any time in my life I might have been to Alton Towers or Warwick Castle, it will often involve driving or taking some form of transport that requires petrol or diesel. Would you find yourselves quite sensitive to where those petrol and diesel prices are over the years?
Yeah, I mean, up this whole year, we've had to be creative around value for money because we recognise people's wallets have been a bit pinched this year. And so we run promotional partnerships with various brands around the UK. What we did see post-COVID was the end of revenge spending, and it's been a bit more normalised this year. So anything that gives people a bit more cash in the pocket is welcomed from our perspective.
Ella Hoja, who's with me as well, investor from Newton Investment Management. Ella, a lot of this, I guess, is down to the oil price, something we've been talking about in recent weeks, about it feeling lower than it once was. Where did we get to? $73 a barrel last week? What's been driving that has meant the knock-on effect has been felt at the pumps?
Well, if you think about supply and demand, on the supply side, we've had plenty of supply despite concerns, certainly on the geopolitical sphere. And on the demand side, it's actually one of the biggest importers of oil is China, and China's been seeing weaker growth. And certainly the prospects there have been less benign. And so that's been one of the key factors sort of pushing global growth a little bit on the softer side. And as a result, that seems to have a direct impact in terms of what happens to commodity prices, particularly oil and gas.
Does that mean it could be more likely we see a fuel duty rise at the budget next month? Or at least, yeah, I mean, it's always a bit complicated when we talk about fuel duty every year, because there's always a sort of a built-in rise in the books, isn't there, the balance sheet of the government, that every year throughout those Conservative governments they sort of said, oh, we're not going to actually do it, so it felt, you know, you were teased it might be coming, and then they didn't do it, and then Rishi Sunak cut fuel duty by 5p a litre a couple of years ago. Could it be that we actually just see a changing of approach from this government, where it's, we're not going to try and keep a lid on fuel duty, we're going to let it go up a little bit?
Well, if it's part of the green agenda, I mean, I drive electric myself, so I'm certainly biased in that effect. But I would imagine probably they won't touch the fuel duty at this juncture. I think there's other targeted areas for potential tax rises. I think we talked about consumer confidence being on the weaker side right now, so I think a fuel duty would certainly hit that. So let's hope they won't.
Fiona, are they the kind of things, we have a budget in a month's time, we've talked about consumer confidence just in recent days, but where you may see quite a sharp impact on how customers are spending the tickets they're buying months ahead, when we get the details of the budget and what that means in a month's time?
Yeah, I mean, we're clearly impacted by consumer confidence. One of our asks actually of government at the budget is to reduce VAT. We saw it during COVID that when it was reduced to drive demand. It worked. We were at very low, about 3%, then 12.5%. Our ask of government is to reduce VAT so that we can compete better with our neighbours in Europe. For example, people in the UK, it's more expensive to go for a day trip or a staycation than it is for those in Europe. Our VAT at 20%, if you're in France or Germany for similar products, it's less than 10%. So our ask is to get the VAT to about 12.5% for our industry.
Right. OK, there we go. 850-58. Want to join in the conversation about what's going to happen in the budget? Believe me, you will have opportunity galore in the weeks to come on Wake Up to Money this morning. I tell you what, we'd no way be able to get through every single box set that's been sent in this morning. Fraser and Steel Game. Another shout for Steel Game as well. I definitely need to make a note of that. Malcolm in the Middle, one of my all-time favourites, says Stanley Hull. Currently binge it on E4 Extra at the weekend. Red Dwarf, great British sci-fi. Wobbly set, true classic British sci-fi tradition. Others saying Channel 4, early morning. Still watch Cheers. Great dialogue, says Fran the Man. 850-58, what is your comfort box set of choice? 30 years ago, Six Friends popped up on the US TV network NBC. Were welcomed into households across America and around the world.
You are my midnight mystery kisser!
You were my first kiss with Rachel?
You were my first kiss ever?
Monica Ross, over 10 seasons, a total of 236 Friends episodes, ran for an entire decade until May 2004. Final episode, of course, one of the most watched finales in TV history, 50-odd million and more in the United States. Joining us from LA is Lisa Richwine, West Coast media reporter for Reuters, covering the business of movies and television. Lisa, thanks for staying up. Morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thanks for having me.
Lisa, what is it about Friends that has meant, you know, so many people 30 years on are making it still one of the most streamed things around?
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, it was a groundbreaking concept at the time because TV shows had typically focused on traditional families and workplaces. And this show was about people in their 20s trying to make it in the world. And I think a lot of young people who have found the show can relate to that. It's a time of your life where you're getting your own apartment, you're getting a job, you're trying to establish yourself, and, you know, you've got all kinds of challenges to deal with along the way. And a lot of people related to it.
It's fascinating, Lisa, that the amount of people who've got in touch about this early on a Monday morning to tell us which box sets are their comfort ones, their go-tos, but also the array of TV shows that people are still watching from either many decades ago, or some of them, like Ted Lasso, have only been around a few years, but are still, people are starting to get new comfort TV go-to things. Is this a big market? Does it form part of the thinking when some of these streaming platforms now launch these mega series?
Well, sure. And as you mentioned, there were 236 episodes of Friends. So for a streaming service, they love that because they want you to come back again and again and again every night, make it a habit. So if you get hooked on a series with 200 episodes, that, you know, they are happy that you'll be coming back. I'm sure Cheers had, you know, which I heard one of your listeners mention. Yeah, I'm sure there were, I don't know how many episodes they had, but it's a lot. And it's the kind of the same thing where, you know, you can watch them over and over. You can kind of watch them out of order. If you want to, or watch, people watch them again and again. I know people who say, you know, oh, I don't know what to watch. Let's just throw in an episode of Friends. And, you know, it's a fun, a pleasant show, and people like the characters.
And in terms of how big a business it is now, Netflix paid, was it $100 million-ish for the streaming rights? And I guess there's more, is there, that people are working on to try and keep people's attention of the brand?
Sure. Yeah. That was a big deal for Netflix. Back in 2015, they didn't really have a lot of their own original shows. They were looking for something to fill up their library. The episodes are on Max now, and still very popular. But yeah, you see Friends t-shirts. You see it out in the culture. You see people with the Central Perk coffee mugs. You know, they're definitely, the companies behind Friends are, you know, keeping it going. And, you know, they've been really successful. I feel like it may be even more popular than it was, you know, back in the 90s, measured by how often you hear people talking about it. And you see, like I said, people wearing T-shirts or whatever.
Yeah, I've just reminded that there's a Central Perk, you know, sort of franchise cafe, I think, in the Primark in, well, there's one in Manchester.
Wow.
I don't, Primark's a sort of big sort of high street clothing chain that we, one of them that we have here in the UK, but you know, these multi-floor sort of department store things, and they clearly have done some deal with the brand holders of this to be able to do that at some point. Are those stream platforms thinking of all that kind of stuff? Are there people in the room, do you think, Lisa, trying to think how can we maximize these new ones that we're making now?
Oh, sure. I mean, that's part of, you know, developing any kind of show now. You want to really make it into a franchise where it's not just people sit down and watch it on their television, but, you know, they'll buy products, or like in the case of Stranger Things with Netflix, they had a theater show going in London, right? You know, any kind of way they can get people to spend money on the show, sure, they'll do it.
Lisa, thank you. Lisa Richwine, West Coast media reporter for Reuters. Big thanks to Fiona and Ella, and everybody's been in touch with their box sets. That is it from Wake Up to Money. Box set available on BBC Sounds. Breakfast up next with Rachel and Claire. Morning, both.
Morning. Thank you, Sean. Coming up on Five Live Breakfast, we're going to speak to Rachel Reeves as Labour begins its first conference as a party of government for 15 years.
We'll look back at an epic clash at the top of the Premier League.
And it's smuggled into the net! The folded Arsenal crack! And it's 2-2!
The voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
Morning, everyone. Let's start with the main news this morning. Then Rachel Reeves will use her first speech to the Labour conference as Chancellor to try to brighten the party's message after weeks of dire warnings about the state of the public finances. She'll promise a budget of real ambition with no return to austerity. Her speech could be overshadowed by continuing discontent over the decision to scrap winter fuel payments for millions of pensioners. Here is our political correspondent, Harry Farley.
Rachel Reeves will strike a marked shift in tone today from Labour's recent warnings about the state of the country. Writing in The Times ahead of her speech, she says she has never been more optimistic about our country's fortunes. As the party looks to move on from days of questions over donations and internal feuds, the Chancellor is expected to confirm a commissioner will investigate more than £600 million of COVID contracts awarded under the Conservatives. But there are also warnings of tough choices to come. One of those already made, the decision to cut the winter fuel allowance for most pensioners, is causing deep discontent among Labour's rank and file.
Israel says it's conducting extensive strikes on Hezbollah targets in Lebanon. Last night, President Biden said the US will do everything it can to stop a wider war breaking out after a weekend of heavy cross-border fire.
BBC News has learnt that police records of machete, swords and so-called zombie knives have doubled over the past 5 years. 32 police forces across England and Wales released figures showing the weapons appeared in more than 14,000 crime logs last year. That's up from around 7,000 in 2019. Pooja Kanda's 16-year-old son, Ronan, was murdered in a case of mistaken identity in Wolverhampton in June 2022.
I'm shocked they were available when this happened to my child. And I am more shocked that they are still continuing to be available after what happened to Ronan. And I can't have that happen to another child. I just can't.
The final phase of the post office inquiry will begin today, looking at current practice and procedure at the business. The inquiry was set up after hundreds of sub-postmasters were wrongfully convicted of stealing money from branches based on evidence from the faulty Horizon IT